You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Season with Peter Schrager is a production of the NFL in partnership with iHeartRadio. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of The Season with Peter Schrager. We are recording this on Halloween, Tuesday morning. It is trade deadline day as well, so we're not going to get too much into potential transactions or transactions that might happen, because by the time you listen to this, it's going to be already done. But if you listen to this podcast, you know it's been an ongoing couple weeks where I've been previewing and giving out a little bit of information about my Celebrity Jeopardy appearance. Now that it aired last Wednesday, the cat is out of the bag, and I promise not to mention it every week for the rest of my life. However, my two beautiful producers slash executives on this podcast are both on with me now. Aaron Wong Kaufman, the greatest producer in the game, and Jason English, who is in that studio every single week with us, is from the iHeart team. I wanted to open up the phones and open up the lines and allow you guys to more or less ask me anything you might have as questions, but also serve as a press conference of sorts. I will start with this, though. For the listener who has not watched the episode, it was myself, Mira Sorvino, and Adam Rodriguez, who is an actor. We went down to the final Jeopardy question. Sorvino had a small edge on me. I bet just about everything, and Sorvino bet everything, and we both got it right, and she won. I will give you some behind the music, though, now, as I think it does pertain to some of your questions, and we'll get into all of it. If you watched, you might want to rewatch it so we can get to the nitty gritty, depending on Aaron and Jason's questions. But here is the backstory of Final Jeopardy, if you watched. So we go into the last couple questions, and Sorvino got like a $1,000 or a $1,500 question and like a $500 question. So it's a big point swing of like $2,000. And she had, I want to say, like a $1,000 lead on me going into it. It was, you know, it might have been like 9,000 to 8,000, whatever it is. No, she had 12,000. So it was 12,000 to like 1,100. So she was up by like 1,000 on me. And I'm like, give me something, because I was rolling. I was in the zone here. I'm like, give me a topic that I know I can bet it all for and I can get it right. The topic comes up and it's tween lit. My heart sinks. Here's the process of how it works in real life. Just as you see on TV, you get that final topic. They give you 30 seconds to write in your wager. So she's up 1,000 on me. I'm like, tween lit. I'm like, they couldn't give me Arizona Cardinals wide receivers. They couldn't give me like 1980s Van Damme movies. I would have been money with anything. Anything U.S. history, I would be good. Tween lit, as much as I'm a pop culture guy, it is a blind spot. And as I look over, and I would like the Jeopardy producers to hear this, Mira Sorvino has multiple teenage children sitting in the first row of the crowd, and she looks over to them, and I get like a thumbs up from them. They're encouraging her. I'm like, oh, so like any tween lit of the last 10 years, she knows. So my brain starts scrambling, and I'm not intimidated, but I'm also like, who wrote the Twilight books? I'm like, damn it. Who wrote the Twilight books? Abrams. I knew it. I was like, it's like Abrams. Then I'm like, who wrote The Hunger Games? I didn't read any of these books. I've never read any of these books. I'm like, Hunger Games. Collins. Suzanne Collins. This is just walking by a Hudson News every week for 5 years, going to different NFL games, going to LA, being delayed, walking through Hudson News. Then I'm like, all right, it's Edward and Richard, or Edward and Charlie. Who are the two vampires? Okay,
it's Edward and Jacob, and it's Stephanie Meyer. So okay, it's not so an Abrams. It's a good thing it wasn't Twilight.
Stephanie Abrams is like the Georgia political, right, like in the Democratic Party. Shows you how smart I am. I'm glad I didn't get local election politics either. Thanks for correcting me. I would have gotten that one all wrong. So Stephanie Abrams, we see you. Is that her name, Stephanie Abrams, the one down in Georgia? Can we look that up, or is that wrong?
Stacey Abrams.
Okay, what was the guy?
Stephanie Abrams is
a news anchor?
A meteorologist on the Weather Channel.
There you go.
Yeah.
Shout out to Stephanie. That's great. Just like everyone asked me, who'd you go up against at Celebrity Jeopardy? And I said Mila Kunis for the first 2 weeks. And it was actually Mira Sorvino. Not great with names. Not great. I'm like, Mila Kunis. They're like, really? Mila Kunis. It was Mira Sorvino. Anyway, Sorvino's got these kids, and I'm like, I don't know, you know. So I just said, I'll bet just about everything. I think I bet 7,200. I had 1,100. And I see her smiling, and I'm like, she knows this. So we get to it. The question is, and I don't know if the word for word, but basically it was like, this tween literature author later said she regretted not calling her famous book just Margaret as opposed to the long title. And I'm like, are you there, God, Margaret? That's probably wrong, but I'm like, that's Judy Blume. I know Judy Blume. I know Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing. I know Super Fudge. I'm like, hell yeah. I go, $7,200. I'm already in pot committed. Who is Judy Blume? I have enough time where I could write, you know, hello, Mel and Betty, my kids. I've always wanted to do that. I was on cloud nine here, but then I look over and like Sorvino / Kunis / whoever had already written her answer, and it's just like staring off into oblivion. I'm like, so then they come to me and it's like, all right, Peter, did you have, you know, the correct answer? I'm like, who is Judy Blume? Hello, Mel and Betty. And he's like, that is correct. Jennings, by the way, a mensch. Love this guy. He's like, that is correct. Peter, how much did you wager? 7,200. And you want to say hello to Mel and Betty. And I said, good night, guys. Good night, Mel and Betty, my two kids. And like, that was cool. Great. Got that in. Now I'm like, a competitor in me, as much as I want everyone's charity to do well, and I want Sorvino to fall on her face. I want her to come out here and be like, who's another teen literature person? J.K. Rowling. I wanted to see something. I wanted her to get something. She comes out and she's like, who is Judy Blume? And she is right. And she bet it all. So she was nervous about me, which I liked. She bet 12,200. So I can go to sleep at night knowing I played a great game. I also can go to sleep knowing that even if I wagered all of mine, 11,000, she still would have won because she bet all of hers. In closing, Michael Davies, the executive producer who also works at Sony and has a million other shows, Watch What's Happening Live and Good Morning Football, all these things, he has put in this thing for Jeopardy now where you can go online and look up the stats. How many times you've buzzed right, how many times you got it. Here was the backbreaker for me. If you noticed, and we'll get through it. The first category, I didn't even get a buzzer in. I was in a $2,000 hole from Go, where both Sorvino and Rodriguez had the buzzer down. The buzzer was screwing me up. I finally got the rhythm down. But I buzzed in on, I got 19 questions right. Aaron, Jason, I only got 3 questions wrong. My entire Jeopardy experience, 19 right, 3 wrong. 2 of them happened to be daily doubles. So I got burned on those where I got them wrong, and we can go through them. The correct answers, I don't know if you asked me 20 times if I would have gotten either one of them. I have no regrets on those. But the one that really screwed me, there was some question about fungus. It's at the end, and it says something with the internet and a web, and these guys both answer, and it was $1,500, and they both answer wrong. And if I had just stayed quiet and not guessed anything, I would have had a nice $3,000 swing. I probably would have won into Final Jeopardy with the most points. I probably would have won the entire thing because I got Final Jeopardy right. But there was this like I'm feeling it. I was hot. I felt like Michael Jordan against Utah. Like, I'm like, I can't miss right now. And this is like Cliff Robinson and the Blazers. And I'm just shrugging to the crowd because I'm so hot. I buzz in and I'm like, what is the dark web?
And I think that's a great answer.
It was about fungus and a web. And everyone in the crowd like gasped because, you know, on the dark web, it's like porn and like child, like disgusting things. And I don't even know what the dark web is, but I'm like, the dark web. And he's like, sorry, that's incorrect. The answer was wood wide web, which I don't know what that even is. I mean, this is Celebrity Jeopardy. We're dumb. Like, what are you doing with wood wide web? I got it wrong. It cost me $1,500. I was in a funk after that. And I'll be honest, if I didn't buzz in, I probably would have won Celebrity Jeopardy. I have no regrets. I did it. So I got 19 right, 3 wrong. Sorvino got like 26 right and like 7 wrong. So she was quicker on the buzzer. So if I had like 22 that I even got a chance to answer, she had 33. She was quicker on the buzzer on like 11 of them. So I will take my hat and I will do hats off to Mira Sorvino. She kicked my ass in Jeopardy at the last second, and she did so by being better on the buzzer. She was a worthy opponent. I am proud of her. We have not said a word to each other since. And watching it back, she had kind of a snide comment after I guessed who is Debbie Gibson. Like, she was surprised that I would know Debbie Gibson. Mira, please. While you were starring in Oscar-winning films, I was in my shag carpet den of a computer room down in Freehold, New Jersey, listening to not only Debbie Gibson, but to Tiffany, to Sheena Easton, to Belinda Carlisle, to the Bengals. I go deep on pop music. That was my experience. We can ask all the questions. We got about 5 minutes until our guest comes on. So I'll start with you on a press conference. I will call on you guys. Ask me anything. We're going to start with you, Aaron. What is your first question about the Jeopardy experience?
So Mr. Schrager, when the categories are shown and they're revealed, which was the one that A, gave you the most anxiety, and the one that B, you were like, I got this?
Okay. Most anxiety was Nobel Prizes. Didn't know if we're talking about the Peace Prize. Didn't know if we're talking about like some scientist. And sure enough, one of the daily doubles was about the Nobel Prize for science or something. And it was like, this city, I guess, do you remember the question?
What city is it? Are they awarded in?
But it wasn't where they awarded in.
It's where's the newest prize awarded in this Scandinavian. I wouldn't have gotten that one.
Jason, I'm like Scandinavian. So I'm thinking Helsinki. I'm thinking what's Norway? And I didn't have it in my head. And I'm like, is Denmark? And I was like, I'm going to go Denmark. I'm going to say Copenhagen, which sounds like an elegant city, great city. And I had just been watching The Bear and that restaurant. What's the restaurant? Like Noma, is that what it's called? It's like the fanciest restaurant in the world. And I think it's in either Copenhagen or Amsterdam. I was like, what is Copenhagen? Feeling like it was chance. The answer was, what is Oslo? And I'm kicking myself. I'm like, of all the daily doubles, why do I get one in Nobel Prizes? So that's a great question. The one I felt most confident in was the EIEIO.
You did so well in that, yeah.
And I cleaned up, bro. And it was basically pop stars who have those letters or pop bands.
Songs.
And I got One Direction.
Genie in the Bottle first.
Genie in a Bottle from Christina Aguilera, One Direction, and Debbie Gibson. Kicking myself afterwards, they said, which Madonna's greatest hits is EIEIO? And I'm thinking about Madonna's greatest hits. And I'm thinking of the movie, what was it, Truth or Dare? And I'm thinking, is it called Truth or Dare? It doesn't make sense. I'm like, it was around the same time. And of course, it's the Immaculate Collection, which I had that 2-album CD in my bedroom. And I'm kicking myself, but no regrets.
That was a hard one because they didn't give you a ton of letters in that one either.
No, it was just like blank. All right, Jason, what do you got?
All right, so I don't often request to come on the podcast here, mm-hmm. but I felt this is important. My favorite thing about this show is when you go deep with coaches, GMs about their origin, how they started making copies, breaking down film. I feel like you have a similar Jeopardy story where you were a viewer and then you were playing on the Commodore 64.
64, sure.
And then you got to read a clue. Was that last year?
That was last year. I got to read a clue. It was like, this NFL quarterback went from the 49ers to the Chiefs and then beat the 49ers the first time they played. Who is Joe Montana? All right, go on.
So that, for most people, that would have been enough Jeopardy. That's the pinnacle. But this season, Celebrity Jeopardy, the advanced analytics, I think, are going to back up your claim, your strong candidate. Second place finish, acquitted yourself well.
Solid showing.
I'm getting to a question.
I love your question. You're like me on these podcasts.
I don't want to end there. I think that we've got a lot of influential sports media and media people who listen to this show. Michael Davies, your friend.
He doesn't listen to this, but go on. Yeah.
We can forward him this, clip this part. Sports Jeopardy. Why isn't there Sports Jeopardy? And why aren't you the host? This should be on 600 markets across the world.
Jason, it's a great question. I'll go even more specific. The NFL, the most powerful brand in the business, Jeopardy, the most powerful game show. I think we could just do NFL Jeopardy and it would be a huge hit. Throw it on the NFL Network instead of re-airing a preseason game from 2014 or showing some crappy, you know, re-air of a game that we haven't. Throw on just episode after episode. We could bank hundreds of these and it would do really well. I think people from the NFL Network and the NFL media, you know, conglomerate that employs us listen to this. I'm not trying to say it's the biggest no-brainer in the world, but it wouldn't cost much. I would do it with such joy. We could bank 400. Now, here's my question to you, though, because I'll spin it on you. I think it's a no-brainer. Do you have current NFL personalities as the guests, or do you have the most hardcore football fans as Jeopardy contestants? Or do you like have like Sean McVay versus Kyle Shanahan versus Nick Sirianni? Jason, your thoughts?
I think I'd want some personalities in there. So you're the host. Are we bringing on players?
Yeah, when you're building this show. Yeah, no. I just said coaches. Like, we have coaches and GMs, and you have owners, and you have some players, but like, then you got to really sort of, you know, narrow it down to the current day. But I was thinking, like, you know, let's have an owner's edition. Let's have NFC West coaches. Pete Carroll goes up against Sean McVay, who goes up against Kyle Shanahan. Do you want to go that specific? Because there's a way to do that. Or is it just the smartest celebrity fans, the guys and gals who live and breathe this thing, and you can go real deep and be like, who wore number 25 for the Denver Broncos in the late 70s? And it's like, boom, who is, you know, Haven Moses? You know, like, do you want that?
Yeah, I think I want that. I think it would be too difficult to get the coaches, get the GM, you know, get your buddies who you know football. Like, you can't just always be like, when you guys do that Good Morning Football game where you just show pictures of old quarterbacks, like that could be the $100 round.
Yes.
and then move on and get that the elite level. Who are you inviting on in this first season? Sweeps week. Who we got?
Aaron Rodgers is a guest. Tom Brady's a guest. And Peyton Manning's a guest. That's your first episode. The three intellectual quarterbacks, the three, you know, smartest Jeopardy guys. I would have all those guys on. Then I would go sports media style. I would have Collinsworth versus Aikman versus, I don't need Herb Street. I think NFL like voices. Romo. I would go Romo versus Collinsworth versus Aikman and have Greg Olson. You know, maybe if one of those guys is not available or whatever it is, we slide Greg in. Like, that's how I would look at it. And then you could have Eisen versus Tirico versus, you know, James Brown. I don't know. There's a million ways to go about this thing. And I think it's a great idea. Again, the IP is there, the NFL is there, and I don't want to give any more away because someone listening is going to probably take it and Rich Eisen will end up posting it instead of me.
All right, I got one more for you. One final quick one. Of all the 19 questions you got right, which is the one you're most proud of?
Great question. I took a few guesses that were right. One of them was the two bridges connecting, or the bridge that connected two peninsulas. Yeah. It was like the upper and lower peninsula of this state, and it was, what is Michigan? And that was a complete shot in the dark. Another one was a fungus question. It was early on. It was like, this fungus, and I was just like, I don't know any fungus, but it's a $200 question. What is mushroom? And they're like, that's correct. And I pretended like I knew what it was. I didn't know what it was. And then I took a wild guess on the veal one. And it was like, this type of veal is named after a famous musician who did it my way. And I'm like, oh, that's Sinatra. So I didn't know. And I originally said, what is? Then I changed it to who is. I was in the zone. I had an amazing experience. And like I said, the producers were great. Everyone was great. And it's over. And, you know, my son got to watch it. He was proud of me. My wife got to watch it. I think she was into me for the first time in like a year. So it was cool. I got texts from so many people that I have not heard from in years, but also people that I didn't even think would be Jeopardy watchers who didn't know I was going to be on the show. It really meant a lot. And if you do know me and you didn't text me, I also remember that as well, because that's just how I live my life. You know what I mean, Aaron?
It just, you know, no beef held there, right? No. Yeah. No.
We've got a great guest, as you see in the title here in a second. We're going to get to him. But real quick, it's Halloween today, and I dressed as Al Davis on the show, and I like watched 45 minutes of Al Davis interviews just to like get down the affect and the Brooklyn, yet also get the walk right, and it felt great. You'll appreciate this. They did the blow dry of the hair, but then they slicked it back. It was like a concrete like slab on my head. I had the white on white satin with the amazing white pants. I had chains. I had pinky rings. I had the whole thing. So we get done with the show. I take it off and I'm like, all right, time to go back to Brooklyn. I, you know, take a subway back. I get back off the subway looking, and I realize I never removed the rings or the necklaces. So I'm sitting there with this crazy hair, regular clothes, and pinky rings and a necklace that was like a big gaudy silver necklace. I almost got myself pickpocketed. Like, I don't know what I was thinking. I was on the subway. But yes, that was my experience. And then later today, I'll be trick-or-treating. And I got to be honest, I kind of want to get back in that Al Davis gear. I kind of liked embodying Al Davis. It felt kind of good. Aaron, are you trick-or-treating? Do you do this as a man with no children at the moment? Do you still engage?
Yes, we did two parties this weekend.
Hey,
and
now.
Just like, very active weekend for me. And also, just like last year, I remember you asking me what I was doing for Halloween.
You went as like Beethoven Symphony or something.
No, I went to the dog Halloween costume contest in Fort Greene.
How was it?
And I did it again this year, and it was incredible.
I love that.
I was telling Shayna afterwards, I have never felt more I was like, it was like rooting for a sports team.
Yeah.
There was one dog in particular I wanted to win, and they did win.
What did said dog go as?
David Byrne in the oversized suit.
Yeah, it's not making sense. I absolutely love it.
It was so good. And like, I truly have never loved a costume like that. And then I went as Carmi from The Bear.
Yes, dude, great. Why Carmi? Why not?
Still have my temporary tattoo on.
Nice. Why not Richie? Too deep cut. You like Carmi?
I had the equipment for Carmi a little bit easier, I think.
Okay.
So,
all right. I would have gone as, what was his name? Fack. I would have gone. What was his name? Matty Matheson. What was his character? He was great. I loved him in the back. All right. One more thing. This year I've been in devouring books on my flights to LA and back. I've read the Michael Lewis book about SBF. I've read the Isaacson one on Musk. I'm reading all the stuff that's out. I'm reading it. I have to make a recommendation. Everybody read the John Stamos memoir. It just came out. There's been a lot of press about some of the things he says about his marriage to Rebecca Romijn. Don't be sidetracked by that being what this is. This is a true Hollywood story. He goes from a kid working the griddle at his dad's Greek diner in, I want to say, like Irvine, California, to being a soap opera star in the 80s on General Hospital, to then going to Full House, to then a movie career, to then ER, and all the way in between. He's got stories about hanging with Don Rickles and Frank Sinatra and his relationship with Saget and Dave Coulier and the Olsen twins. And then there's some really like honest and vulnerable stuff about marrying a woman who at the time was a model, and then after he married her, went on to be the swimsuit model of the year, star in the X-Men movies, and have a giant, giant career while his career kind of took to the back burner. And I thought Stamos in this book is incredible. He's vulnerable and basically says she emasculated him, and her career was such a force in his world that, you know, he couldn't live with it. And then he goes into what he discovered on her and how do you lift yourself back up? But like great stuff about him and his father's relationship, great stuff about him and Saget's relationship. I got to tell you, I didn't expect to be crying at the end of a John Stamos memoir, but that is my recommendation to all of you. Stamos's new memoir. I don't even have the name of it. Aaron, do you have the name out there? Because I'd like to pass it along.
Yeah. His memoir is called If You Would Have Told Me.
If You Would Have Told Me. It's fantastic. So everyone, I promise you, you will not be disappointed. My favorite book of all time is a memoir. It's Andre Agassi's Open. I also think Matthew Perry's last year, very appropriate now, was incredibly well written and well done and great stories and tragic in its own way. Another celebrity memoir I've always suggested to people if you want to read a good one is The Kid Stays in the Picture about Robert Evans. And then another one that is not as well known, Rob Lowe had a really good one about a decade ago. And his life is even crazier than anybody's with what he went through as far as celebrity and fame goes. So all that to get to another book author, a guest who is on here to talk about a very cool project he's doing, but I figure we'll do a little deeper dive with him. An idol of mine, truly, Dan Patrick, joins us next.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think. He's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
He's a hero of mine. He's still at the top of his game. And he's become a friend and a guy that I really, really do love. He's got a new book out also. It's called The Occasionally Accurate Annals of Football. It's with a co-author, Joel H. Cohen, but the guest on The Season with Peter Schrager this week. It is an honor. Mr. Dan Patrick, welcome to the show.
Are you nervous?
A little bit.
Okay, don't be. You're used to being asked questions, or now you're doing the asking.
Yeah. Let's break the fourth wall here. Like when your guys first asked me to come on as a guest to your show, it was almost like being asked to host Saturday Night Live or something. I was like, I've been watching you, listening to you for much of my life and also throughout my career. And you'd always had everyone else, the Peter Kings and the other sports, right? And I was like, oh, I got the call up to the big leagues. And I just never wanted to myself when I was on your show. I just wanted to always do a decent enough job where I can get asked back. And now I feel like Seinfeld at the Tonight Show with Johnny. Like I would get the call back and I have probably gone on like 11 times. So it's really crazy for me to be interviewing you right now.
I didn't know that's the goal, to not yourself, but hopefully you achieved your goal. But no, I like enthusiasm. I like somebody who's different. You did your homework. The Good Morning Football is a fun show. And you know, that's what you want. You want guests that get your show. They can play along, and you certainly have. And that's why, you know, we enjoy having you on. And Kyle Brandt as well. You know, it's just getting fun people on saying interesting things.
I appreciate it. So I'm sure you think I just grew up watching SportsCenter, but I actually, it was before that. Like, I don't think people realize that CNN had a powerhouse of a sports department and program. Like, I used to watch, I think it was Nick Charles and one of the Cellini brothers. Who was it, Vince or
Well,
Nick?
There was Vince, but it was Fred Hickman and Nick Charles.
Fred Hickman and Nick Charles, right? And I would watch them every night on their CNN show. And then on the Sunday nights, they would have an NBA show at like 10:30, and it was, and it had Stephen A. Smith on it before, like, Stephen A. Smith was like this national guy. But this is like mid 90s, early 90s, and you were the dude in the late 80s, early 90s on that network that I fell in love with you then. Does the CNN sports era of sports TV just get completely overlooked in an ESPN, like, you know, world that we're in right now?
Yes. And I think that at the time when we had CNN Sports, we were a better sports department than ESPN was, because we had talent. We also had really good writers, journalists, because you had to at CNN. Not to say you didn't have it at ESPN, but I don't think that was a priority. I think entertainment was a priority there. And when we did our show, Nick and Fred were as good as any team who's done it.
Awesome. What was the show called? Do you remember what it was called?
Just CNN Sports Tonight.
CNN Sports Tonight. And yeah. I was always like, SportsCenter or CNN Sports Tonight. And then CNN Sports Tonight, we never talk about it anymore.
No. And there were a lot of, there's a lot of talent that came through there. And Dan Hicks, Hannah Storm, Vince Cellini, Gary Miller, Dennis Dumler, Nick and Fred. And those were the people that were there when I was there. And a lot of people behind the scenes went on to do great things. The person who started it was Bill McPhail, who was the first president of CBS Sports.
Huh.
And back, you know, he put on the, you know, the greatest game ever played with the Giants and the Colts.
The Colts, yeah.
Yes. And he was there for the first instant replay. And, you know, so he was a legendary figure. His brother was the American League president. Yes. Lee McPhail,
sure.
His dad, I think, owned the Yankee. I mean, it was great to talk to Bill, and he ran the sports department. And I just remember I was there for 5 years, and I didn't even have an agent. And what happened was I had lost out on a weekend job in Dayton, Ohio. I thought I was going to get it. They gave it to Ken Kettering, who was a better-looking guy. It's first time, like, the reality hit of, oh, they may not hire the best guy, but they hired the best looking guy. And he was. He even thought I was going to get the job. So I'm devastated. I'm 27. I'm thinking I'm never going to get into TV. I was doing radio, morning drive radio. And I go to Atlanta. A former girlfriend was down there. And she said, you should come down here. CNN's hiring. I go, I couldn't get a job in Dayton, Ohio. And now I'm going to get a job at CNN.
Ted Turner's not hiring me. Yeah.
So I go in. I bring an audition tape that didn't get me the job at Channel 2 in Dayton. And I thought, okay. So the last day I'm there, I don't even know the process, Peter, of how to get an interview. And I have no coaching, no nothing. And I walk in and I go to the front desk, just like anybody else who could walk in. I said, hey, is the person in charge of sports here? And they go, well, who are you looking for? I go, I don't know. Who's the head of sports?
This is incredible.
And they go, hold on. Yes, I have a gentleman out here, and he wants somebody in sports, and I believe he has a resume tape. And then they go, she goes, just leave the tape, and somebody will get back to you.
Yeah.
I go, well, I'm going back home. And then she called back.
Great.
To the sports department, and goes,
who is this woman? This is the life changer. This is unbelievable.
He's going back home. He wants to know if somebody can look at it. So they said back, she goes, where are you going? Are you driving back home? Like, how far away? I said, I'm going back to Ohio. She calls back and says, he's going back to Ohio. Bill McPhail happened to be from Columbus, Ohio.
Come on.
And he said, have him come back. Because I said, oh, I'm going back to Dayton, Ohio. I go back. I meet him. And he puts the tape in, and he watches 3.5 minutes. 3.5 of 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then he popped it out, and he goes, when can you start?
Dan, I'm about to cry. I love this story. I've never heard this. Have you told this story anywhere? This is incredible.
I've mentioned it. But I got hired to do headline sports.
Sure.
I'm making $18,000. I took a $10,000 pay cut to go to CNN, but I wanted to do sports. And I'm doing it, and I'm not even on camera. I'm doing headline sports. But I loved it. You know, I'm editing all the highlights, voicing it, and then you know, get it over to headline news. 6 months later, Keith Olbermann leaves the New York bureau at CNN to take a job in Boston. And my boss says, "Have you ever been to New York?" I said, "Oh, yeah." No, I'd never been to New York. I'm from a small town in Ohio. I've never been to New York. And then they go, "Well, would you be interested in, you know, being the New York bureau reporter replacing Keith?" And I said, "Yeah." I took the job. I went and I stayed in the downtown athletic club, which is where they
used to. The Heisman, sure.
So I stayed there for 3 months. I was only supposed to stay for a month, but I was so nervous that I didn't have enough money to get an apartment in New York. And so I said, "Can I stay a couple extra months?" And then I did at the DAC. And I remember that I finally got an apartment. I made $800 a month, and my apartment was $550. So I wasn't really killing it, but I was covering New York, Boston, Philly, DC, any story that came up. So I'm covering Larry Bird against the Lakers in the NBA Finals. I'm covering Billy Martin with the Yankees.
Yes.
I'm there with the 86 World Series with Bill Buckner and the Mets. I got to cover so many great events just by being up there. And, you know, it really changed my life. And I met my wife at CNN.
That's incredible.
And I don't encourage people to lie. But you don't always have to tell the truth. How about that?
And I do think there's a message there, though, because you went to Dayton.
Yeah.
I went to Emory, which is not exactly a hotbed for sports media. I think there's a impression amongst young people in our industry that you have to go to Syracuse or Northwestern or USC, and there's a path. There isn't a path. You have to be cunning. You've got to be flexible. You got to be willing to, in my case, write for any blog that would have you. And in your case, move to any city. You have all these students now at the Full Sail. Like, what is your message to them as far as getting into the door?
Well, what I wanted to do at Full Sail University, and they have the Dan Patrick School of Sportscasting. Your degree is in sportscasting. Your bachelor's degree is sportscasting. We want you to understand, you know, how tough this is. What you need to know, we want to give you the answers before the test. But as I tell all these students, I can get you over the wall. Are you running when you get over? Are you walking? Are you crawling? Because this is it's the most competitive job field in America, in my opinion, because everybody thinks they can do it.
Yep.
Like they all sit there and go, I could talk sports. Okay, you can. What do you do after 15 minutes when you run out of things to say? But I tell my students, we're going to get you ready, but it's up to you. When you go in there, being professional, understanding ins and outs, you may not be on camera. There's nothing wrong with, you know, being behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And I brought Gus Ramsey with me, who worked with me at ESPN for over 20 years. And we hire people who have been in the business. You get hands-on experience. There is no faculty that is better and has more experience than mine, because we have over 200. Factor in my experience, then all the people I worked with at ESPN, assignment desk, reporters, producers, you're hearing it from the people who actually did it. And that's what I wanted them to understand. This is the business. If you're lucky, this can be your job. But there's your first job is being a student at Full Sail University, because there's no frat parties. It's not socials. It's none of that. You're showing up. This is your first job. And, you know, it gives them that dose of reality of how tough this is going to be. And our job is to make it look easy. That's why, like, I wanted to do it when I saw Bob Costas. I go, man, that looks easy. It's not. It's those who can do it really well make it look easy and fun. You could never have a bad day at SportsCenter. No one would let you have a bad day, because how could you have a bad day? You're doing SportsCenter.
Right.
Well, you can have a day. It's just you can't let anybody know, because that was the dream job years ago.
Absolutely. So much so that there was an ESPN reality show called ESPN Dream Job. And guess who stood online?
Did you really?
With 200 people in front of the ESPN Sports Zone in Atlanta in Buckhead. And guess who my first break was? I waited in that line. And I was wearing a shirt that said, I just want to meet Bill Clement. And it was the most random, like, ESPN person I could think of. The hockey guy, Bill Clement. I get in there. I'd never done any broadcasting. They give me a quiz, and I got the quiz all right. I got 10 out of 10. And then I got pulled aside by Howie Schwab and Al Jaffe.
Yeah.
And Howie Schwab was the researcher. And they said, what do you want to do? I said, I'll do this show, sure, but all I want to do is write for ESPN.com. I'm a huge Bill Simmons fan. I love Ralph Wiley. I love the writing. I love reading. The Hunter S. Thompson at the time was writing for ESPN.com. Like, I love it. I just want a chance to write. And then they led me to a different department who were the editors on the website. And it all happened because I wore a terrible t-shirt, but stood out and waited in that line. And that was the job for me, dream job. For you, you go from CNN, then you get to ESPN. I have to imagine, you go to Bristol. It's not a huge, bustling metropolis. It's a campus. I have to imagine there's a lot of ego, a lot of testosterone. What's the pecking order when Dan Patrick shows up to Bristol, Connecticut in the late 80s, early 90s?
I got there late 80s, March of 89.
Okay.
And Chris Berman was basically their Mount Rushmore.
Yep.
I mean, it was Chris. And he probably deserved two heads up there on Mount Rushmore, Tom Meese and Bob Lee. Mm-hmm. And I got there, and look, I thought what we did at CNN was better than what they did. So I didn't go in there intimidated from the standpoint of, I don't know if I'm on equal footing. Now, people have to understand where Chris Berman was back then. I mean, without Chris, you don't have ESPN. You just, and Bob and Tom, you just don't, because they were doing it. We didn't, you know, they probably didn't know who's watching, how many people, like what place they had in somebody's life. But I got there. They made me observe for 3 months.
You didn't get on air until three months of watching them.
And
wow.
I kept saying, I can do this. I know
Guys,
what I'm doing.
I've done it before. Yeah.
And what happened was, I would come in and Chris Berman would call me the Charlotte Observer. He'd go, it's the Charlotte Observer. And all I did is I would sit there from like 5 PM until midnight watching them put together, you know, SportsCenter. They had to, everybody wrote their own scripts. And in the right corner, so we had this wall of monitors. So all these games are up there. In the bottom right corner was porn. So porn was playing after management
just
left.
Just Spice Network, just yes. On, de-scrambled. Yeah.
And I just remembered it was right there in the right corner. All these games are going on, and porn is in, you know, the right bottom right corner of it. And I go, I'm not at CNN anymore.
I don't think so.
And I was going to do my first show, and I don't know who was going to anchor with me.
I was going to say, who's anchoring with you?
Chris Berman had just done the 11 o'clock.
Yep.
He stayed and said, I'm doing your first show.
Hell yes.
And I was so honored by that because
that's so cool.
He stayed. And I just remember he was so loud when we got on the air. And I even said that. I go, man, you're loud. And he goes, you can always go back to CNN. And I was like, all right. Let's go. I'm all in with this. But the fact that Chris stayed, and I never forgot that. I thought it was a wonderful gesture. And then soon after that, I started doing the 11 o'clock with Bob Lee and stayed doing the 11 for 15 years and then decided that I wanted better hours to be a better father and husband and did the 6 o'clock Sports Center the last 3 years.
A quick anecdote, and tell me if this lines up with what you... He was larger than life at ESPN, and yeah. He's still larger than life. We're at the Super Bowl 2 years ago in LA, and Kyle Brandt and I are like at SoFi Stadium on like the outside campus, like outside the stadium. Everyone's going into the stadium. We're on the outside, and a golf cart pulls by, and this guy's wearing a... I mean, and again, my memory might make it even like it's like a tall tale, like it's Paul Bunyan or something, but a giant straw hat in a golf cart. And I just had to, I'm like, Chris Berman. And without even hesitation, he tips the cap and just just bows at us. Yeah. And I'm like, that's
it. Yep, that's
it. And then I've been in airports with him. You could have Leo DiCaprio. You could have, you could have Margot Robbie. The line of people who line up to say hello to Chris Berman is unlike anything I've ever seen. And he's larger than life.
He's probably the first guy who connected with people so personally because it was every night. And think about when you watch TV at night, are you in somebody's bedroom, their living room? I mean, there is a shared intimacy to that, that he's kind of in my room with me. He's taught, you know, people would say they felt like they knew me because I was always in their house. They could hear my voice. And that's the power of ESPN. But Chris is the first guy nationally who was able, I think, to connect with people every single night. And, you know, that made him endearing to so many people.
So then eventually you and Olbermann link up. And I will tell you, we called it the Big Show. And it felt like rock and roll, honestly, that these two guys were, you know, the ones in the back of the class. While everyone's in a suit and tie, it was the two of you guys making little underhanded comments. You had inside jokes. You had jokes with the viewers. And you guys just hit it off in such a way that at that time in my life, I'll just, you know, everything's personal with me because I'm an egomaniac, so I bring it back to me. It was Saturday Night Live, and it was the era of Sandler and Myers and Farley and Spade and those guys. And then it was you guys on Sunday nights, and it was like Saturday night and Sunday night. Those were my dudes.
That's nice.
Did it feel that way?
No.
When you were doing it? Did you realize the impact you were making on an entire generation?
Later we did, but you have to understand, management did not encourage us. They didn't want us to call it the Big Show. They were worried, and you know, a former boss of mine said, we don't want another Berman. We don't want somebody who we can't control.
Larger than the brand.
Yes, and they were worried about that, and I understand that. But Keith and I, we just sort of said, okay, we have to do this in a clandestine way. That's why we had inside jokes. That's why it was sneaky. It was never overt. And I think it made for a better show. It's like, you know, when I used to listen to Howard Stern, when you couldn't say certain words or you couldn't show 100%. Something, it made it even more impactful. It's like, oh my God, now I can visualize that. We weren't allowed to be in front of the product. It was, you had to be sort of pick your spots, have fun with it. But Keith was such a wonderful team player that he wanted to make a great show every single night, every single night. And we never took it for granted. You never mailed anything in. It was every night. And you wanted to entertain each other. That we never knew what you were going to write. I never looked at his scripts. He never looked at mine. Probably 60 to 70% of the show was ad-lib.
Yep.
And we only had, you know, three camera people and a floor director, and you were trying to entertain them. And we thought if we made them laugh, then maybe the people who were watching. But we never really knew the impact until a little bit later on. And then Keith was only there for, I think, 5 years.
Yeah.
But it was magic. We never, ever, ever discussed why it works or let's change something. It never. We would type our scripts. Keith would usually type his in 45 minutes. It would take me 3 hours. And then we would get together. They didn't want to pay for a makeup artist. So we had to put our own makeup on in the bathroom at 10:30 at night. And then we'd be on the air at 11. And then we'd go our separate ways. But when we got to ESPN, we were doing a show. But that was really the only interaction that we had. But I liked it. Because we didn't waste things.
Yeah.
You know,
that's Kyle Brandt and I do the same thing. We don't ever reveal. I don't even know what he's doing as Halloween today. Like, we don't ever reveal anything. Save it for the air. Save it for the air.
And I like the surprise element of it, but it was live. And there's something about doing live. But also, we would do the highlights. And the fact that we were on at 11 o'clock at night, let's say a game ended at 11 o'clock or 11:07. They'd have to edit the highlights and then bring them in. We hadn't seen them.
Sure.
So
you're getting a shot sheet. Yeah.
They give me a shot sheet. They bring it in. I can't tell you the number of times I'd be on camera. So I'd be reading the prompter here. And I go, and Cleveland hosting Milwaukee. And Kenny Lofton is having an incredible streak. You know, he's 19 games in a row. I'm reaching out over here off camera to get, and let's go to Cleveland, you know, Municipal Stadium. Boom. And then I look down at the shot sheet. And then we start the highlights.
Yeah.
And just the rush that you would have.
Such a thrill.
Of it's live. And there'd be names on there.
Yeah, like you didn't know.
Spelling, penmanship. And you'd just go, you know what? And that's why we came up with catchphrases, because it allowed you to cheat a little bit. So if there was Greg Maddux to Mark, 3-1 to Mark McGwire, gone. And then I would pause because then I could look on the shot sheet and go, McGwire's 32nd of the year. Yep. You know, he's got 94 RBIs and the Cardinals lead 5-3. So it allowed us to kind of gather, and then you could look at the shot sheet, and it just kind of helped. And then after a while, we sort of mocked ourselves with, let's come up with catchphrases that are so stupid.
Give me some of them. I love these.
It was Cowhide Joyride. And I remember, it was a home run. And I was like, that's a Cowhide Joyride. And I remember Keith going, Cowhide. Like, he even said it on the air. It's like, Cowhide, what? What? And I got the biggest kick out of, we wanted to make each other think, laugh, you know, whatever emotion you could get out of somebody. If it was a serious story, you know, you wanted that. But you know, it worked. And I remember when he left, I said, you'll never have this again. I think he had gotten bored. I think he wanted a different lifestyle, and he went to Fox, and I just said, you'll never get this ever again. And, you know, he realized that soon after. And I never got it back. Again, I had wonderful people to anchor with, but there was nothing like that with anybody else. Just because, man, when you're on that wire and there's no net and you know you can trust that person, you know, you really build a bond. And we certainly had that.
It's special. But then you guys crossed over into like, beyond just SportsCenter here. I mean, the commercials, which you guys dubbed, this is SportsCenter. But then I think a major moment for like back now, every rapper has athletes in their videos and every musician is dating an athlete. It wasn't necessarily the case. When you guys were on that Hootie and the Blowfish video, that was major for everyone. Like that was major. Can you take us through the impetus and the genesis of that story?
Well, I'll go back to the This is SportsCenter ad campaign because that started after Keith and I got scolded for basically trying to secede from the union. Like, hey, where you guys, you know, we were a hot air balloon that was tethered, but we were still drifting pretty high up. And I remember we got called in and management yelled at us. I mean, really yelled at us. And I remember they wanted us to stop calling it the big show. We wanted every time you go to break, when you're teasing things, we want you to end with, this is SportsCenter. And I remember when we came out of the meeting and Keith famously said, I'm shell-shocked. I mean, I'm like, I can't lose this job. I got three kids at home.
The whole thing, yeah.
And so Keith goes, F them. And I go, what? He goes, F them. They're not going to fire us. We'll say this is SportsCenter. I go, okay. So this is in the afternoon. We have to do a show that night. I mean, imagine how we feel. We just got aired out by management.
I've had those talks. It's scary.
We get there. Doing the show, we go to break after like 18 minutes. And then, you know, coming up, and Keith goes, this is SportsCenter. And I go, all right, it's on. And then they created the ad campaign. So I go to my boss, John Walsh. I go, why don't we promote SportsCenter? And he goes, we don't need to. I said, you promote all these other shows, you know, NFL Countdown.
Yeah,
and then he said, all right, we'll do an ad campaign. And it was called This is SportsCenter. We couldn't get any athletes to show up because you have to go to Bristol, Connecticut.
Yep.
They don't pay you. They gave you a donation stipend of $2,000 for charity. And I called Grant Hill. I called a lot of people, but I called
in the favors.
Grant Hill and Jason Kidd. And I said, would you like to be in a commercial?
Co-rookies of the year. Let's go.
I know. And it turned out they both were like, well, where do we have to go? And I go, Bristol, Connecticut. What do we get paid? I go, well, you don't get paid. And thank God they did it. So Grant played the piano in the lobby when I have a bad show. He's, you know,
you have the jacket over
my shoulder.
I remember.
And then Jason Kidd, we went to a helipad and he was getting out of a helicopter with his videotape of his game, and here were his highlights. And then he was telling us what highlights. Those were the first two. And then after that, everybody wanted their own SportsCenter commercial. And then I think because Hootie and the Blowfish, they had just broken with Hold My Hand.
Yep.
I actually we crossed paths at the Masters. I've known those guys for, it's 29 years now.
Wow.
But they were too afraid, nervous to say hello to me. And I didn't see them there, but they said, you know, we walk by you. And I think it was the 94 Masters. And they reached out and said, would we like to be in the video? And I don't know if Keith was aware of them or how aware I was. And I knew he was going to have Dan Marino and some other people. And then we became friends. So I've been, my 40th birthday, I went to Europe with them for 8 days, traveling around with them, London, Scotland, and Ireland, doing amazing shows. First time they'd been over there as a band.
Awesome.
And then my 50th, they came to my house and performed. And then my 60th, I went with some friends, my brothers and Darius, and we went to Pebble Beach. If I'm around when I'm 70, I'm not sure what I'm going to ask them to do, but they'll probably, you know, at least Darius is going to be involved in it because he's been around for a long time. Good friend.
So cool. Then you get the connection with the Sandler guys, and you're in probably like a dozen Sandler movies.
20 or 21 movies. That sounds, you know, pretentious that I don't know how many movies, but it's, I think it's 20.
I mean, and it's not just you, it's the Danettes, it's all the guys.
Yes. Well, he's extremely loyal.
I can imagine. I mean, look at the guys in his movies, all of them. Yeah.
He goes, Danny, once you're in, you're in. And I, you know, it's like a mob family. Like, you're in for life.
What was the first movie you did with him?
I did Waterboy.
Okay.
And then I told him I didn't want to play myself. Like, once again, how arrogant. Like, right, I'll do it. I don't want to be myself. And he goes, all right. Sandler goes, you're Danny McPatrick. You're going to be a police officer and wear a mustache. And I'm in The Longest Yard, and I'm a police officer wearing a mustache, and we try to arrest Sandler at the beginning of the movie.
That's my boy.
That's my boy.
I got that one, Sandberg.
Yeah, he wanted me to be a sort of a Jerry Springer type guy, talk show host, and just go with it. I'm on stage with Dave Matthews, Jennifer Aniston, Nicole Kidman. I mean, he's been very, very generous. I don't know if it's to the detriment of the, you know, finished product,
no,
but he's been very, very generous through the years. And he wrote the foreword to this book. He didn't even know what a foreword was. As I said, Sandman, can you write the foreword to this book? Danny, what's a foreword? I said, you know, the beginning of the book, and you know, you kind of write whatever. And he goes, what am I writing about? I said, you can write about your love of the Jets.
Yeah.
All right. Can I write about how much I hate the Patriots? I said, yeah,
that
go ahead.
Sounds great.
He goes, how long is it going to be? I go, just go until you stop. And he goes, okay. Next day, he sends me his forward, the draft. And then he goes, there, hopefully that's what you need. And I said, awesome, Sandman. It'll be great. And then the next day, he texts me. He said, Danny, got to take Tom Brady stuff out. You know, I hated Tom Brady because he was with the Patriots, but I don't want to say I hate Tom Brady now, okay? And then I said, yeah, we'll take it out. Don't worry about it. So it's about his love of the Jets, growing up in New Hampshire, being a Jets fan.
So good. They say that his sets, like when you're filming, he's so hospitable, he's so gracious, and it really is as fun as it looks. And a lot of times it's in some pretty cool locales. Do you have a good story about where you went from one of these movies?
Well, I went to Hawaii.
That was for Just Go With It, right?
That was Just Go With It. And it was a big part. I mean, I had a big part, and I'm on stage with Aniston and Kidman. And I remember the night I got, I shot part of my scene. And then Nick Schwartzen, the comedian.
Minnesota guy.
Yeah. So Schwarty shows up. He's in the movie, but he goes, Danny, we're going drinking tonight. And I'm going to drink you under the table. And I said, Nick, don't do that. and he's like, oh, okay. Yeah. You know, I said, Schwarty, I'll crush you. Well, he didn't believe me. I walk into the bar. It's a Tommy Bahama's bar in Hawaii. And he gets me a mind eraser that is in a tall glass. And he goes, I said, what are we doing? He goes, We're downing these. I said, wait, we're going to down the whole. And he goes, yeah. And so I down a mind eraser. And then next thing I know, there was another one that came over. Then another one came over. And I said, Schwarty, you know what? I owe it to Sandler to be ready to go tomorrow. And he goes, oh, are you being a you want to? And I go, all right. I said, here we go. Look, if you die, you asked for this. This is self-inflicted.
Yep.
Well, we kept going. Next morning, nobody knows where Schwartz is. Mm. Afternoon, nobody can find Nick Schwartz. Later in the evening, nobody's heard from Nick Schwartz. I'm getting ready to shoot my scene. Schwartz comes in, looks horrible.
Disheveled mess.
I mean, he doesn't look good to begin with. But he goes, hey, come here. Yeah, you can't tell Sandler. You can't tell. I said, what?
Like the principal or big brother or daddy or something.
He got so messed up. He fell asleep in the sand trap at the golf course across from the hotel.
Incredible.
Lost his keys, lost his cell phone. And no, he didn't lose his key, lost his cell phone. So nobody could get in touch with him. But he comes in and he might have just got out of the sand trap. And I just remember, I said, Schwartz. He goes, all right, you're right. I won't do it again. The next night we went out, he didn't have a drink.
Yeah.
You know, we went to a sushi place. But Sandman will always say, look, just don't make the newspaper. Don't make the newspaper doing anything. And then we went out with Dave Matthews. First night I was there, and I'd never met him. And wicked sense of humor. But he knew no sports.
He doesn't know like South African like cricket or rugby or anything?
I don't think he knew. No, I don't think he knew anything.
Not the Ernie Els guy?
But he goes, I guess you're the sports guy. I go, I'm the sports guy. Sandler would always introduce me as the sports guy. To Aniston, hey, this is Danny's the sports guy. Kidman didn't care. She couldn't care less about me. But I'm sitting down at a large picnic table at a restaurant, and I'm across from Dave Matthews, and I reach out to shake his hand. I knock my beer over into his lap. Perfect. And he goes, wow, that's quite an introduction. And he was great. Yeah. He was so much fun. Like, he would always walk up to me and he goes, you're pretty tall. How tall are you? Well, in the movie, there's a scene where he says something about that guy up there on stage is pretty tall.
It's stuck in the movie.
Yeah, it was just Sandler left it in there. Aniston was wonderful, spectacular, funny, gorgeous. Nicole Kidman had just had a baby, and she was in incredible shape. But she was an actress.
Yeah, I know. That's a thespian.
Like, I couldn't go over there.
She's in her character role. Yeah.
So I was trying to prevent them from figuring out too soon that I didn't know how to act. That was my goal. And it didn't take long before Kidman's, you know, sizing me up and realizing this guy is not an actor. Yeah. Aniston may have been a little more generous, but I thought, God, if I ever get alone with Kidman, I'm not going to have anything to say.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking I'm not going to be, you know, off the set, you know, talking to her. I'm in the green room of sorts for actors who are ready to do their scene or waiting to do their scene. I walk in and Sandler's bulldog is in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, some sporting event is on. So I sit, got Sandler's bulldog with me, and Nicole Kidman walks in. Well, it's one of those where you walk in a room and you hope somebody doesn't see you and then they walk back out. But she walked in and then we made eye contact. So she had to stay. So she comes over and sits down. Nothing's being said.
Just silence.
It's excruciatingly quiet. And my daughter said, hey, if you ever want to bring up something, an icebreaker for Nicole Kidman, I've got one. You know, I'm born on the same day as her daughter. And I'm thinking, okay, sweet. If I ever need it, it's in my back pocket. Well, first thing I say to her is, you know, my daughter is born on the same day as your daughter. And she goes, oh, that's wonderful. That's it. That's it. We had nothing. We had nothing. Well, a couple of days later, Keith Urban, her husband, comes to the set. He sees me. He wants to talk about the
Dan
Titans.
Patrick, let's talk.
Yeah, and her look on her face is like, you know this guy?
Yep.
And all he wanted to do was talk about Tennessee Titans. But Sandman does have, you know, it's usually good locations and fun people. And it's, you get things done, but it's, you know, you're having fun along the way. That's really important.
We only have a few more minutes with you. I want to ask you a couple other quick ones here, because the Sandler connection is one thing, but you've also been on The Simpsons before, and I think that's a good segue to the book. How does this book come together and your experience with The Simpsons? What's the connection?
Well, Joel Cohen, who co-wrote this with me, is one of the head writers on The Simpsons. And he reached out to me and said, hey, we have an episode where we need an announcer, and it's Homer's involved in a rock skipping contest. And
rock we thought, skipping?
Yeah. And so I said, oh, I'd be honored. I'd love it. And he said, I'll set up the script, and we'll do some kind of moment here where we record it. I go, okay. And he goes, you know, while I have you, how do we fix the Jets? And I go, well, how much time do you have? And he goes, no, I think I can fix the Jets. And then he brought up the butt fumble. Why is it, you know, all the blame goes to Mark Sanchez and not the offensive lineman who was blown up by Vince Wilfork?
Yeah.
So these were things that were bothering him. And then, you know, he would talk about the Patriot mascot, Pat the Patriot, like all of these things. He goes, I don't have an outlet like you do. And I go, and then I threw a couple of things back at him. And then it was verbal tennis match where we're just throwing things back together. And he said, I'm going to write these down. He goes, would you want to write a book? And I'm thinking, sure. Like, yeah. And then I didn't realize, but he said, he sent some stuff back and he goes, all right, this is what you said. This is what I said. And I think we got somebody who will publish this book. And I go, what?
What? Oh, why?
What? I go, does America need this? He goes, well, football books are always serious. They're about men. They're about, you know, integrity. They're
tradition.
You know, they're gladiators. And he said, let's just have fun. You know, like, let's talk about Ken Stabler smoking bacon-wrapped cigarettes. Like, you know, that's his diet. Let's compare Tom Brady's diet to Ken Stabler. I said, all right. I said, and he goes, we don't have to be accurate. That's, you know, it's the occasionally accurate. So we're not burdened by truth. We don't, but we do represent every team. We look at the decades. We look at football, what it'll be like in 2073. And it was just fun. He's an extremely bright guy, and it just made the process so much more enjoyable. And then I do the audio version. So if you want a bedtime story, I can read this to you. And that was a fun process. There were, like, we have something on Nipplegate with Justin Timberlake. And there were a few of them that and Andy Richter wrote a story, part of the chapter, Conan's sidekick. And then Joel started telling his friends. So his friends go, hey, I got a story. So, I mean, I was like, I can't turn this down. I'm going to write a book, but everybody else is going to write the book for me. And, you know, we just sort of, there was nothing that was off limits. We just thought there would be something. If something was funnier, then we took out something. But it was... it's been rewarding. It's been enjoyable. And, you know, Joel has become a friend as a result.
And it's in black and white, right? And it aesthetically looks really cool.
Yes.
I love that.
But we do the Wizenator, Ontario Smith.
Yeah, I remember Ontario Smith, Vikings running back. Couldn't get through that airport. That was unfortunate.
We fix penalties. Let's see. Things you don't bring to a tailgate. We made the Immaculate Reception a sermon. We do talk about, we have people who, critique me in the media if I'm any good. And so there's trash talk. I mean, there's quite a few things in the book, but it's meant to be tongue in cheek, but, and hopefully people take it that way, but it was, and every team is represented, and some of the best players who have played for these teams, we have fun at their expense.
In closing, I got this podcast here as like a second or third gig, and I love it. It's like my own name on it. It's the first thing I've had that. It seems like everyone's got a podcast. Everyone thinks they can be Dan Patrick. You've seen the explosion of podcasts and, you know, the explosion of McAfee and you name it. Now you go on your Twitter feed and it's a different young woman touting gambling tips and it's her own show. Like it's everywhere. It's become an explosion of talent facing... like, here's my takes on this and that. And there's an audience for it. Did you ever imagine it could explode like this and our industry would go down this direction?
Well, yes and no, because if you could do a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week sports channel, and then another 24-hour day, 7-day-a-week sports channel, and then another, then yes, that the explosion could be there. Because there's only so many radio outlets for people. Now you give them an opportunity to have their view of a certain sport or sports or whatever it might be. I just worry that, and it's going to sound like get off my lawn.
No, let's go. I'm trying the same boat.
Journalism.
Yeah.
That's because everybody thinks where in the mid-90s, got to have a catchphrase to be a sportscaster. Now you have to have a hot take to be a sportscaster or podcaster. I just want to make sure that, because a lot of people will be loose with language. They'll say, you know, I'm hearing, or, yeah. and I'm hearing gets left out where Peter Schrager says, you could say, hey, I'm hearing. And then all of a sudden it's, no, Peter Schrager says that the Raiders are moving on from Davante Adams.
Sure.
They don't listen all the way. And therefore, it becomes a story. And I always caution my students, have a source. Don't be afraid to have a second source. When we were on ESPN, we had to have two sources. If you had a story, and as crazy as this is going to sound, I was on vacation with my wife, and sitting next to us was Tony Dungy's agent. Mm-hmm. And he said, hey, did you hear that Tony's going to get the Tampa Bay job? And I go, no. He said, no, I'm on vacation. And yeah. I thought, well, let me call into the assignment desk.
Sure.
I call in the assignment desk, and it might have been Steve Peresman was the guy, maybe. And I just remember he needed another source.
You're like, no, the agent just...
But I couldn't tell him that I'm getting it from the agent because the agent said, don't attach my name. And I'm going, I have an unbelievable source. And then he said, I need a second source. They got a hold of Andrea Kramer, and Andrea was able to confirm it. And then Andrea, I think, broke the news. But I'm like, I'm on vacation.
I don't want this news. It's just in my lap. I'm doing you a favor.
I'm not an insider. I'm just telling you. Hey, yeah. Tony's going to get the job with the Buccaneers. And I just remember it's like, holy, I don't want to work this hard at a story I won't get credit for.
Yeah.
I don't want credit for it. I want us to get credit for it. But, you know, I caution those who do it that don't be afraid if you're going to say something that you have something to back it up. Because everybody can do the following. Oh, you know, a source told me. Well, I don't have to tell you my source. But you hope that people are still going through the process. And look, I came up with CNN and this is the way you did it. And I'm going to go out that way. You can't be loose with, oh, I'm hearing.
Well, I feel fortunate enough that I spent 20 years having to do sources. And that by the time I say something on air, you're not questioning that process. A lot of times now, I see people saying stuff on air, online. Like, I don't know who this person is. I don't even know what this Twitter handle is. I don't know if to believe it or not. And the check marks are all askew.
Yes.
So it's very complicated, especially, you know, when it talks to off-season stuff and trades and rumors, because then I'll hear from the GMs and coaches and be like, I read this from this Twitter feed. I'm like, I don't know who that is. I don't even know who the person is behind that.
Yeah.
Someone said it well. This is the era of anonymous reporters.
Yeah, that's another thing where you're going, I don't know who the reporter is, but they're breaking this story on Tom Brady. And then you have to follow that story, and then you have to figure out, is it true or not?
Is this a real person?
Yes. And if somebody has an opinion, we had Rick Neuheisel on, and I said, where is Jim Harbaugh in a year? And he said, he'll be in the NFL. Well, that's just his opinion.
Yes,
it's not like he's reporting that.
That's not Bruce Feldman saying that. Yes.
It's Rick Neuheisel said he thinks Jim. But that's how it went. When we think that people go, they'll obviously know that, hey, I'm saying this in jest, or I'm just telling you something that's my opinion. It becomes, you know, the truth. And then it's out there. And then all of a sudden people run with it. And you're like, hold on. Like, you can't bring it back. And I hope that people who do this understand. You can have a hot take. I like to have an informed take. It may not be hot, but if it's warm, great. I hope it's accurate, more importantly.
You're amazing. You're awesome. I feel like we could do a part two, and we haven't even talked about your interview prowess and
we can do a part two whenever you want to, Peter.
We'll do it. Yes. So appreciate your time. Guys, everyone who's listening, the
and
book.
Jamie's pregnant?
Yeah, Jamie's prego.
That's awesome.
She told us that a couple weeks ago. We're like, okay, that's amazing. And she's like, but I don't know how to reveal it to the audience. So today on Halloween, she dressed as Rihanna, of course, performed the half to me. And then she kind of dropped the bomb on the audience and is like, and yeah, just like Rihanna, I'm pregnant. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
She's awesome, by the way.
Yeah.
Amazing teammate.
Yeah, I never met her. And I've talked to Kyle before. And, you know, his angry runs are epic.
Yeah.
I worry that he's going to, yes, something's going to happen.
Like, he's not a,
something's going to burst.
Yes.
Yes.
Dan Patrick, such a thrill. Thank you so much for joining the show, man.
Peter, thank you. And I'll be watching.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm not guarding like that, CJ.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Aaron, Dan Patrick, as good as advertised, maybe better. Was that not awesome?
Yeah, I don't think I've heard him speak so casually and openly about a bunch of historical, not historical, but like the glory days of SportsCenter. And like, I loved it.
Yeah. It's interesting. There was that giant ESPN book that James Andrew Miller wrote. And maybe Patrick shared that in there, but like when he starts talking about the stuff with bosses and the bigger than the brand, that's all news to me.
I'm
a big fan. You know, like, it's a thrill for me. Obviously, I was geeking out. I felt like Chris Farley. Like, what was it like? You know, he's talking to Paul McCartney. That's it. The book, I'll read. I'll probably listen to it. I like Dan's voice. I'll listen to it. But that was cool. And this podcast was cool. And as we wrap up, we got to do our weekly sponsor. And this is with Uber Eats, our peeps. It's time for Delivering Results, presented by Uber Eats. And this week's Delivering Results winner is Jahmyr Gibbs. I was like a proud papa watching Jahmyr after I hyped him all of August as a number one running back, as a fantasy guy, as the person you need to be following, as the guy that is going to make the Lions a contender. Out of nowhere, with Montgomery hurt, he gets the lion's share of the carries finally in Monday night's win over the Raiders. 189 yards from scrimmage. Jumped into the crowd. Kyle Brandt, my co-host on Good Morning Football, had a good one. He said, that's called the Ford pickup. You know, you got the Lambo leap. That's the Ford pickup. Delivering Results. He's our winner this week. And that was Delivering Results, presented by Uber Eats, where you can get almost anything. The official on-demand delivery partner of the NFL. Order now. On behalf of Aaron Wong Kaufman, on behalf of the great Dan Patrick, on behalf of Jason English, who made his second appearance on the microphones from iHeartRadio. He's a very, very, very vocal part of this podcast and the direction it goes, and all in good ways. As far as all the guys in LA, we meant to say it, Aaron, oddly enough, Shepherd U did not hold up their end of the bargain. They lost. But Arizona, which is the secondary team where our executives, Jason Kleinman and Matt Schneider, are proud alums, they did a major upset victory on, who'd they beat, Washington, or was it Oregon State? They beat a massive, a number 11 team. So they did their job, but the Shepherd guys and my man Ernie McCook, you know, just didn't get the job done. So we got one out of two. This weekend, real quick, Aaron, I think I might go to USC Washington. It's homecoming at USC. And Kingsbury invited me to go as a guest of his. But if I'm being completely honest, I probably am not going to go. Seems like a lot of work. I gotta, like, if I go to a college football game, I gotta drink, and then I get to there and it's like I'm always constantly checking my phone. Like, I want to go home. I've got a show and a 4 a.m. wake up. Maybe I'll tell Cliff I'm gonna go and I'll just lie to him and watch it on TV. How's that sound?
No, you can't do that.
He doesn't know. He's gonna be busy. I don't even know what his job is with the USC. He's like involved with the offense, but he's not the offensive coordinator. He's not the head coach.
Can
but
you go for the first half?
No, is that worse? I would only go for the pregame and just say hello to him, and then I would peace. But I do want to see Caleb Williams warm up, and Penix too. All right, I'm wasting too much time. Thank you, everyone, for listening. It's Halloween. I'm going to go trick-or-treat. Enjoy yourselves. Please be safe, and we'll see you next week.
The Season with Peter Schrager is a production of the NFL in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.